Can you hear me?
Yeah, I knew you could. Oh, that's even better. All right, welcome along to the last day of MS Ignite, which I promise I will call a tech ed. It's just going to happen, so I'll go right up front. Well, you've sort of been attending a lot of conferences. It's the nostalgia that you sort of remember it by its first name, those first really big tech eds that you come along to. Thank you all for coming along to a very early session on a Friday morning. They love giving me Friday morning sessions. I've really upset someone once upon a time. I keep saying sorry to every person at Microsoft I meet, and I haven't found the scheduler yet. And they put me in the arena, because I love seeing faces and talking to people, and then they put this great big set of carpet in between me and you guys. And then you get, there's got to be a couple in the back of the bleachers up there. I expected a few more, really, so I'm glad to see you down the front here. My name's Anthony Borton. I'll be talking to you about managing projects with minimal effort using VSTS and TFS 2017. Who's using VSTS already? Well, that's awesome. TFS, keep it up if it's 2017. Anyone? Hey, woohoo! Excellent. Right, you can present. Excellent. So he's offering some case studies of how to do it wrong. I see a lot of those case studies. So I've done the usual thing that a presenter's never supposed to do. I changed my entire presentation just a couple of days ago. Yeah. And then I proofread it, and I think I got the typos out. And then I changed it to some this morning and added two more, which is probably to add 10 more typos. But that's okay. I don't mind that. On the last day, that's my excuse. I sort of figured you guys, after the attendee party, probably a bit bleary-eyed anyway. Not really, you're all bright and bubbly, that'd be right. So the nature of the presentation I'm going to give is I tried to look at a narrative story. As a presenter, these are the sorts of things that they tell you to do, and they can work really well because we remember stories well. And I tried a logical linear progression through everything I wanted to talk to you guys about. You know what? It didn't really lend itself to that. So hence I've thrown that approach out against better judgment, I'm sure. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to present a series of problems and features designed to fix those problems. In software development, one of the things we're really engaged to do is to solve problems. So let's look at a problem, discuss it, and I'd love to get some feedback from you guys. It helps you guys stay awake, and it helps me realize that I haven't put you to sleep either. So when I show a problem, if you can relate to it, or if it sounds something like you've experienced, just a little show of hands, keeps the blood flowing, keeps you awake as well. So that'd be appreciated as we go through the morning. And if I see no hands, then it means I've completely botched up. Wouldn't be the first, I'm sure not the last time. Welcome, gentlemen. Round of applause for Lightcomers. Come on, let's make you feel really welcome. There's my first two bad evals for this session. Sorry, guys. All right, let me get up here and get started. Okay, so my name's Anthony Borton. I've been a Microsoft certified professional since 93. Usually during at least one session at a conference, we talk about exams, and I think most people in my session earlier in the week dropped out well before 10. Who's done a Microsoft exam? Excellent. Keep your hands up if you've done 5 or more. Sorry, if you've done more than 5. More than 10. Oh, we've still got a couple of people in the game. Is that a down? It's an up. We've got 2 left, 3 left. Okay, more than 20. Yeah. No one? All you people with interesting lives and things. So I've done 60 exams over the years. Not the sign of an intellect, but just a stubborn person that needs to get hobbies. Probably got a couple more coming up in the next couple of months, I think. I've been a certified trainer for over 2 decades. Gets worse every time I say it. And I've been a Visual Studio ALM MVP for about 11 years. I divide my time between Australia and the US, helping organizations adopt ALM best practices using the Microsoft stack. I do a lot of training. I've developed some courses over the years that I deliver around the place. And I get a lot of enjoyment out of helping people achieve better success. I have an interesting job. If I do a good job, I make myself redundant. That's really strange for most people. And a lot of you get maybe an annual review. I get a review after every single course, sometimes a couple a week, which keeps you on your toes. But we've just got another late comer. I probably shouldn't embarrass him as well. That'll give me 3 bad evals already. So, the session title, Managing Projects with Minimal Effort Using BSTS and TFS. In choosing the term managing projects, I wanted to make sure we didn't flip that around and think project management. That's not my intention. What I really wanted to talk about and share with you this morning is more about the agile planning approach, work items, and sort of, I thought I'd just leave dev out of it for now. Okay? There's been some great sessions at the Ignite conference here on the Gold Coast already for the developers out there. So this one's more about work items, whether you're managing it as a team leader, whether you have a formal role of a product owner or a scrum master or some such thing, whether you are a developer, tester, someone just working in a team project, managing your work, sometimes managing work with others. I want to share with you some of the new features. Given that at least half of you are using probably TFS 2005, 2015, and 2017, there'll be some things that I'll show you today that will be completely new, some that you won't even be able to use just yet. Remember that VSTS and TFS are really the same code base with 2 release cycles. Let's see if we can do this. Ready? The fast release and the slow release. That kind of worked. So this one goes into VSTS every 3 weeks, and the bottom one is our quarterly updates, and very rough quarters, by the way. It's not based on the calendar, where VSTS is literally every 3 weeks, except for the one just before Christmas, usually. So that's what I want to talk to you about. If that doesn't sound like what you're interested in, I promise not to take it personally if you want to wander off and grab another session. Seriously. All right, the format of the session, as I introduce to you, I'm going to... Hey, V guy, he didn't remind me that I haven't switched the slides over. Wayne, mate. But you did okay with the music, so you're off the hook, and I'll really say that was completely my fault. All right, well, there's a couple of slides I wasted my time creating. They were the best ones too. They had no spelling mistakes in them. Oh well. So the format of the session, as I said, is going to be very much like this. I'll talk about a problem, a challenge. You guys will indicate whether that resonates, whether you've seen it have that problem or not. I'll then talk about a possible solution, a new feature, a capability in the tool that maybe you already know about, or maybe that's something new for you. And then I'll go ahead and demonstrate that. So lots of little bite-sized tricks and tips along the way. Okay? And I'm sure in my evals I'll see if that worked or whether I should have stuck with the more traditional, you know, narrative story. Evals are great like that, helping you improve and to validate decisions both for better and worse. So make sure you fill in your evals. I'm going to introduce you to a sample application called My Simple Calc. It's aptly named. It is truly, truly a simple application that adds 2 numbers together, and it's a basic template. It's hosted in VSTS. The sites are Azure websites. And you'll see that there are work items in there that look like QWERTY. There's a few of those. It's sort of that evolving demo site that I use. Now, for something as complex as that, we have 3 feature teams that I'll introduce you to. Some of them have some attitude. And some of them don't put necessarily the right amount of detail into their work items. All right, so the first challenge, or the first problem that I want to talk about, is we've got a number of team projects, many different teams in the organization. In a perfect world, you'd be working in just one team, in a team project, and when you come to work each day, that'd be the default for you. Now, some people will work that way, absolutely. But there'll be many others who will be, you know, bouncing across several teams, whether it's from a team lead, product owner type role or perspective, whether you're just the gun DBA doing some work and you have to spread your database goodness across many teams and projects, moving around the navigation hasn't been a whole lot of fun. It has been hard, and a lot of these I'm going to talk about, I'll say that they're paper cuts. So making this little change, and maybe you think, well, actually it wasn't that hard, but it was a paper cut. So if we can remove a lot of those paper cuts, our day should be better. So the solution to this is the brand new landing pages they've provided for us, okay, in terms of the navigation. Change is difficult, we know that, and you know, I continue to go into organisations where you make seemingly a trivial change and you get the grumbles, you know, they've got their muscle memory, it sort of goes and clicks here and it clicks there and they don't even look at the buttons because they've done it so many times. And you change or move one of those buttons, that's not a good story for them. So let's have a look at the new account landing page. Okay, oh, I missed out on my Simple Calc. That's my Simple Calc in all its glory. You can see why I don't do programming talks. And I can go in here and I can add a couple of numbers together. Haven't tested this morning, but anyway. And it tells you the sum of those two is 6. All right. It works so far. It is quite a special application. You know, there are special numbers. 42, we all know, is the magical number. I had to explain that to my wife, why 42's, you know, anyway. And if we try and use the magical number to add things together, well, you're not allowed to. And it gives a very special exception type buried in there somewhere. System exception, you can't use the magic number. Okay? These are great features. I think of them as Easter eggs for the vast number of users that use my Simple Calc. As a good developer, I don't always test in production. I have 3 Azure websites. I've got to use the, you know, the MVP credits somehow. So I've got a staging version and a test version. And I often use this to demonstrate release promotion. The error there is when we have a look at application insights and get telemetry from the application and we see where all these exceptions occur. The unhandled exceptions particularly interesting for us because they're often missed unless one of our users picks up the phone. That's my Simple Calc. Let's get out of there. So what I'm going to show you is the new landing page. So I'll just go back into my account. And this will be the new landing page we're talking about. And it's, again, a very subtle thing. It welcomes me back with a nice friendly little message at the top. And you'll see there it takes me to my most recent projects and teams. And if I am bouncing around between 2 or 3 different teams, that's really, really convenient. You'll notice as I hovered over those, I can then move across to the dashboards, go straight into the work item side of it, move into the testing hub, should I wish to do that. Across the top, this idea of favourites, well, that's exactly as the name suggests. But it's not just my favourite team project. It can be my favourite teams, team projects, queries, delivery plans, my favourite builds. So, you know, those things that I'm currently working on that I want to be front and centre, well, they're easily accessible through favourites. I'll come back, we'll look at work items a little bit later on. Pull requests are there. I can also go in and there are some other choices if I want to put them on that screen. I can go and set some values here, go into the administration side of things as the VSTS account administrator. You'll see up here the new code search. So who's started using the new code search capability yet? Anyone? What do you think, sir? Good? Great. Excellent. That's the right answer. All right. So with code search, this allows me to do a context-aware search of code through my entire account repository here. And you know, where we've done this in the past, at best, it's been a simple string search. But there's no context behind that. I want to go and find something to do with add numbers. And these are the sorts of things I really can't put typos into. And when I press enter there, it's going to search the code base. It's going to come back and show me that that particular thing exists in this project. So it doesn't list all of the projects that aren't involved. It says it's in this repository, and it's used once as a definition, once as a function method, and it's used as a reference twice. And I can narrow the focus down and say, well, show me where it's defined. And it's here, and I can see the code straight away. As I gain more familiarity with that search, I can go up here and say that I'm looking for a string literal. And that string literal is going to be hello. Actually, I'll just go with hello. And I'll see if that's anywhere in my code base. Now, in that example, it was looking specifically for the use of that as a string literal, not as a declaration, not as a property or any other such thing. Once you start using this, I think, you know, for developers anyway, that'll be one of your favourite features. Okay? Code search is available in VSTS, you've just seen it. Code search is also available to be added in TFS 2017. Okay? So when you do that upgrade to 2017 that you're all going to go back excited and look at doing next week, then as part of that upgrade you can choose to go and add code search in there. Okay? So I call that out, it's on that landing page, so it's a great place to help us get started. Get back out of there. All right, in terms of starting a new project, we want to join a team for the very first time. We're not sure how to get started. We don't want to start, you know, by interrupting our teammates necessarily. So what's the getting started approach look like today? Microsoft's created a brand new project landing page. And that project landing page, especially whether it's joining an existing project as per my scenario, or whether it's a brand new project, they make that a lot easier, a lot more friendly. You may remember when you create new team projects previously, it would often come up with, first it was a sort of early generation dashboard, and there was information down here, but you couldn't change it. It really just used up half the screen real estate with probably questionable value. Okay, so let's review the project landing page. In fact, how about we also go and create a brand new team project? So I'll switch back over here. I'll go back into my account homepage. And we'll say I want to create a new team project. Okay. So a very, very straightforward screen to help us get started. And remember, I'm an account administrator, so I can do anything and everything inside this account. But, naturally, it's all backed by security, so not everyone can go and create team projects. I'll call this one Frodo. I'm going to leave it there because that shows it's sort of original and not pre-prepared and sets the scene for lots more typos, I'm sure. So Frodo is my team project name. Is one of my first typos. I'll choose to use Git, or I can go TFVC, whichever the development team want to use, and I'll choose the Agile process template. So a little bit of fault, so I'll simply say create, and let's have a look at what that brand new getting started experience looks like. We'll then switch across and see what we can do for an existing team project. Okay, now hopefully VSTS is just having a good morning. And there it is, ready to start. So given that I've chosen Git as my version control repository, one of the first things it says is, well, how do you want to get started with the source? That's probably one of the very first things to consider. To the right-hand side, you'll see my team members. No one ever wants to work with me. That's just my plight. But I can go in there and I can add more members to the team. So, you know, start saying, well, Fred's going to help me work on this, Ted's going to help me work on this. Wayne, Mr. AV guy up there, is going to help me work on this. Yep, there he is. He's still awake. This is good. Down the right-hand side, there's no code activity there, so it says, well, hey, do you want me to help you add some code in here? It says, do you want to set up a build? And then finally, there's no work items in there, so should we go and start some work? So I love that. It's a very subtle, very simple thing, but it really just makes it so much friendlier to get started. So not a bad one to kick off with. If we had have started this with TFVC as our version control, it would have shown me two panels on the left. The top panel would have been talking about setting up my builds. The bottom panel would have been talking about setting up the project's README page. So if I exit out of there, I'll go back into my SimpleCalc. All right, so in looking at that new landing page for our projects, you'll see that I've got a standard README front and centre. There are other tools that do this, there's no question about that. But I can go in there, create a little markdown file, and put whatever relevant information I want to help my team members get started. So in this particular example, I talk about, you know, what the aim is for this team project. I talk about the team structure. As I scroll down, I introduce the particular teams. In my example, we've got the gold team, the blue team, and the red team. It's the gold team you've got to look out for. They're actually the yellow team, but they renamed themselves. They're very precious. So I can put that information in there. I can also, I mean, it's a markdown page, whatever you like. Over the right-hand side, and I've just scrolled that down just a wee bit, you'll see my team members there, so I can see who's involved in this team. You'll see my activity. So we've had recently 10 change sets by one author. That's just me. I can also see the current quality of my builds and releases. Okay, 100% successful. I'd be in trouble if I couldn't deploy my SimpleCalc, I'm sure. And then down here, we see work items that have been created in the last 7 days and work items that have been completed. And I can change the filter up here to 1 day, 7 days, or 30 days there. So what do you think? So as people see it, I think it is a nice landing page, but the one, I won't say negative, the change. People are getting used to the dashboards. The dashboards are still there, absolutely. But, I mean, I'm not here to, you know, try and sell you anything. We'll wait and see. If you're a big fan of the dashboards, they're still there. And look, I think I like this as the landing page now. I think that's going to be something we will get used to. Switch over to the dashboards. Just to reassure everyone, the dashboards are still there. We'll look at customizing them, going and creating some dashboards a little bit later on. Okay? So, they're not forgotten. Okay, the location of team documentation. So we need a convenient location for some of the team's documentation. And in saying that it's the team's documentation, you know, this isn't necessarily things for our external users. This is probably something just for us to use. We don't want extra tools necessarily. We definitely don't want multiple logins. It's got to be easy to use. And, you know, while there's nothing wrong with SharePoint, it's overkill for the team's internal use. You know, SharePoint's a great content management system, great for our information workers. But if it's just for the development team, then it's a bit of overkill, I think. If you've got it, great, use it. But more often than not in the field, what I come across is that, you know, we have our enterprise SharePoint instance. It's managed by those people. And when we say we want to go and put the TFS ISO in there and go and do some interesting things and we need an administrative account that's going to let TFS do whatever it wants to your SharePoint, your SharePoint admins aren't always big fans of that idea. Anyone seen that one? Is anyone a SharePoint admin that I've just offended? I know you. Okay. So the solution for this one is a very recent thing. So we've wanted... we've wanted a wiki in VSTS for a while. So Microsoft have very recently purchased one of the wikis that was available in the marketplace. I'm not aware they made really any other change to it since that purchase very recently, other than to change who the publisher is. The intention here over time is that this wiki will not be an extension anymore, but rather it'll probably just arrive as part of the product. As far as truth in advertising, it's got a little ways to go. It's got some challenges. So Microsoft have purchased this from the vendor in the marketplace. They've made it their own. And now they're working on the backlog of features and things to improve and change about that wiki. So if you sort of go in and start using it and compare it to some of the industry-leading wikis that are out there today, this isn't even close, to be honest with you. Okay? But it's a great starting point, and it does the basics very well. So feel free to get started with it now, and as Microsoft work through the backlog and they invest in this area, we'll start to see that this particular extension is going to move ahead leaps and bounds, is what I expect to see. Okay, and it's not SharePoint. I shouldn't smile when I say that. So let's have a look at adding that wiki in there. Hey, that's the wrong key sequence. I knew I was going to do that. All right, so if I go across to the marketplace. Okay, so for anyone that attended my earlier session in the week, I'm a huge fan of the marketplace. So the marketplace is an excellent location for grabbing those little extensions, grabbing those little filler pieces that aren't in the product natively. Okay, so if I go into the marketplace, I select VSTS across the top, that's always the default for my browsers. And I'll go in here and simply type in wiki and do a search. That should return this one here. And as I said, the only change they've made since acquisition was really the publisher, as far as I'm aware. So I'll select that one. It is free. I'll go ahead and click install. Anyone tell me what's missing from just here? What's the button that's missing? Download. What does that tell us? Excellent. Well, I shouldn't say excellent. You've got it completely right. The detail there is right now this is not available for on-premises TFS. They've publicly stated that is something that they want to do. We will expect to see that. Don't ask me when. I don't know that they know the answer to that question yet. But for right now, I can choose to go and install it into my VSTS account. We'll put it into this one. Okay. And it's just a trivial thing. It's very, very quick and easy to do, assuming you're an account administrator. If you're not an account administrator, and you can go in there and request these notifications or go to the account administrator, and they can go in there, review your request, and they can add extensions in from the marketplace for you, which you've got to be happy about. I mean, you can't have every account user going in there and running amok in the marketplace. Ah, sure you can. All right, so I'll go in there, proceed to the account, and let's see what that's done for us. So I'll go into my SimpleCalc. And up the top here, you'll see that in my navigation, we now see Wiki. I'll go and say that I want to select that. And it tells me that I should go and create this particular wiki. Select a repository because it's going to save the files in our version control system. This particular version control system, when I created my SimpleCalcs using TFVC, but it really doesn't make any difference. I select the path there. I'll just add underscore wiki to the end of it. I can then choose a unique URL here. So this particular wiki is going to be around our team documentation. So I'll just run with documentation. Yeah, okay, that's even bad for me. All right, documentation, and I'll go ahead and create it. Now, I'm not going to teach you how to use a wiki. I'm sure you can figure that one out reasonably well, but there's our title page. I might just start with this one and call it Key Staff. Okay. All right, so I can go in there, I can list who the product owner is, email address, contact details for them, who the project sponsor is, the people you've got to be really nice to in the car park. It's a wiki. Okay. As they enhance and improve that, I can also do things like add work items in there, reference those sorts of things. So as we get that really nice, tight integration between the wiki and the rest of the product suite, I think that's going to be very, very promising. We'll expect to see things like type ahead and sort of, pound 17, it'll look to see if there's a work item, put the link in for us, little at type ahead buffers, that sort of experience that we want, consistent right across VSTS and TFS. Okay? That's wiki. It's nice and quick and easy for us. And free. Free is also good, especially on a Friday. All right, back over here. Right, key information is often missed in work items. But work item layout form hasn't really changed, or hadn't really changed for a while. As we moved across into some of the new process templates, they made some incremental changes along the way, but it really had been fairly static for a while. So the UX people got involved, and we now have a new work item form, a form layout. Now the form layout is, it's much, much easier to use. So those usability studies have paid off. Now the new form layout's been available in VSTS for a little while now. The new form layout will arrive in TFS 2017. In RTM, it's an opt-in. So you can say, I want to try the new form layout for my project collection administrators. So you can play with it first. You can say, I want to allow my users to opt in. So let's give them a month. So as people start opting in by simply clicking a button and they tell their friends and everyone gets really excited about it, as they will, I'm sure, they can gradually onboard. Or you can just say, hey, it's changing today, click, and force it on them. And that's sort of just tearing off the Band-Aid approach, which isn't altogether bad. If my memory serves me, in TFS 2017 Update 1, I think that's going to be default on the new form layout, so we'll see how that goes. I've had a couple of projects or a couple of clients that have upgraded their servers to 2017. They've got, many of them have already got customised process templates, and it's actually been really, really good. None of them have been too crazy. So if you do have a customised process template you've been using in 2013, 2015, and you choose to go in there and upgrade to 2017 and adopt the new form layouts, it does a good job. It strips out things like splitters and all sorts of other things, the special classifications that we have, the field types for areas and iterations, they all disappear. I better be very careful how I say that. Those field types are no longer unique and special. They're treated the same as everything else. So, yes, to be very clear, areas and iterations didn't disappear. They just don't need to be treated specially under the covers. So, I haven't had any problems with those customizations, but they've been reasonably good customizations already. So let's go ahead and review those layouts. I'd probably assume that many of you are using an existing version of VSTS or TFS, so you're probably familiar with the layouts we've had for quite a while. Let's take a peek. Oh, I keep doing that. What do we got? My simple cook, that'll work. So I'm up to work here. I'll say I want to go and create a new work item. That new work item is going to be a... What should we create today? Let's just create a user story, a requirement. How many of you are seeing that for the very first time, that sort of layout, that change? Just a few of you? Okay. I think it's fantastic in terms of the usability. All fields, the data's still there, so there's, you're not losing anything in my opinion. But through the usability studies, they've done things like first and foremost, up the top there, the title, and it should be the single most important thing on the form here. The requirement on this occasion is going to be, as a logged on user, I want to... Who does that? Who uses that syntax as a title? No one? Ooh, a couple of people do. Just a couple. Not a fan. Not a fan, I've got to say. There's a couple of bad evals again. I'm getting through the audience. It's a trivial thing. I love the syntax. I just don't like where people put it up there sometimes. There was, you guys are going to quote me on this, I'm sure. I think an early version of the Microsoft Scrum template maybe put it there as the placeholder. I can't remember. That's the downside of using so many different versions. So if you want to use that, by all means, go ahead. But maybe the first line of a description is better. A common thing that when I'm teaching our BAs, those sorts of roles, allow users to pay for items in the cart using MasterCard. How many typos? Two. Sweet. So what you then find is they'll copy-paste that, change it to Visa, copy-paste it, change it to Amex. And the key differentiator is at the very end of the title. When we look at our backlogs, we're often looking at them on cards. That's all right because they tend to wrap. But we could be in Visual Studio. We could be looking at it in the My Work panel down the right-hand side. And the differentiator's gone. You can't see it. All you see is the first five or six words, and they're identical. If we go and print reports, often in a tabular format, we're chopping off the key differences between those work items. So as a little tip of something I do differently here, is I try and encourage people to put those differentiators in the first four or five words. It's easy to change this and say, accept MasterCard. Ooh, that's good. As payment for items in the cart. That's a very, very simple change, but another nice little bit of usability there, a little tip to maybe remember. Okay, what do you think, those subtle people that use the other one? Do you agree, or...? So the answer, the response there was they have very distinct groups of users. So for you, you find that it is very, very helpful to be able to group those at the front. Thank you for your answer, by the way. That's a perfect answer. If it's working for you, please keep going, of course. I would probably counter that and say, well, that's what tags can be used for, and we don't need to have that conversation. If it's working, keep doing it. Looking at this form layout, though, first, the title front and centre, whether it's assigned to someone or not, that should be up there right where it is. We see tags here, not tags where they sort of snuck it in before because it arrived late. Tags seem to be the most important thing last time. So our tags are still there, ready to use. This is an admin feature that we're working on here. Who's used discussions before? In work items, you can go across to history, you can go down into that little history area, you can type things. Most of the time we use history to keep track of the changes in the work item. But it can be a conversation. And often we want to capture that conversation. If this is a requirement and someone wants to say, well, why did you do it this way? And I suggest that. And we answer them. And then they come back with another clarifying question and we give them the answer to that. It's got to be captured in the work item. You know, we want to see that conversation, the decision criteria, and a really nice place to do that is in that little discussion area. But in the last form, it was hidden away in the bottom corner, and if you didn't go looking for it, it could easily be missed. Can you see what they've done here? That little zero up the top there tells me that there's been no discussion about this particular work item yet. That little zero. If I go down and say, click that hyperlink, there's our discussions. A typo on his name. Is there no limit to his lack of coordination? I'll go and put that information in there. I'll pop up here and choose to save. And you just simply get a count. Now, it is a global count. It's not an unread count. Okay? That's a common follow-up question that I see. And that's probably not going to get anyone super excited, but I'm trying to show examples of where they've really thought through the usability. A trivial little change here makes this so much easier to use. The other thing that we see here is, well, I'm going to type a lot about description, so let's get rid of the noise around it. Give me access to the full screen here while I work on typing the description in and putting the details there, and when I'm done, I can just bring the form layout back down. One of the things that I'm jumping ahead, so when the slide comes up a little bit later on, it won't be anywhere near as interesting. But one of the things that we see there is the design is going to lend itself so much more to being consumed by devices. Okay, so when that slide comes up, it won't be anywhere near as interesting. But have you ever tried using the existing form layout and edit or create a work item, you know, from your phone? The existing form layout isn't fun. It involves a lot of scrolling around. The controls aren't well optimized for the mobile experience at all. So if you have a look here, well, let's have a look. I'll show you the screenshots of it later. But if I go in here and shrink that. As I start to squash that down, you can then visualize them appearing one underneath each other in a nice convenient approach for mobile forms. Okay. I talked about moving from an existing team project to the new one and choosing these new form layouts. It removes a lot of those structuring elements that would cause a problem, meaning that your customized forms also will then work well with the new mobile forms preview. Okay. Bring those guys back out again. Anything else really? There's a bunch of things there, but for now, you'll see that we've got a lot of screen real estate back. So instead of the big tabbed options down the left, halfway down, they've moved it over here to the right-hand side. Okay. We've still got details tab there. We can still go into the history and have a look at the state graph. I can still go and look at all of my links, and I can still see my attachments. They've made improvements in attachments, so we do get live preview of those attachments, drag and drop of attachments in here. Again, it's all usability for us. If you did happen to pay attention and notice LaunchDarkly, that is a third-party add-in in my account that I'm using. So I think Microsoft use it themselves, but don't quote me on that one. So LaunchDarkly is a third-party tool that allows you to do all sorts of interesting things around feature flags and saying, look, I want to test this feature out, hide it behind a feature flag, and I want to test it with 10% of my users, please. So I can do some interesting things there, but I'll stop. That's not supposed to be a sales plug. So anything else exciting about the form for now? There's probably bunches of other things, but I need to move on. Okay, repetition when creating similar types of work items. So the problem domain here is oftentimes we create work items that are quite similar. We might go in and if someone's going to raise, let's say, a production bug, our workflow says that new production bugs should go to this person. And as a new production bug, we want to have that tag on it. And we want to default the priority, perhaps the severity, to different values compared to bugs that we might find within a sprint as a developer. I don't know. Okay. But you will find there is quite a lot of that repetition. So what we want is we want to use work item templates. Anyone going to tell me that that's not new? It's been around for a while? It has. It's, I think, previously only been found in the power tools. Okay, so they've not only baked it into the product, they've changed where it is and made that a little easier for us. Okay, so let's see how that works. So I'll switch back over here. Work with this one. And you all know that, you know, as a Microsoft product, there's a dozen different ways to do anything. Work item templates are no different. Probably the easiest way you'll find to do this is I might go and say I want to create a new bug. Okay, so we create this empty bug. I might go and say that all new bugs should be assigned to, we'll assign them to Shane, she loves bugs. This template's going to be used for bugs that are found in production, so I'll tag that with production. I want the default, it's normally 2, so change it just to demonstrate the use of templates. And I can pre-fill in any of these things that I want to form part of the template. Now, if you look around the screen, you won't see the word template anywhere there. So what I'm going to do is pop up here. There's templates. And I can capture the value that you see, the values you see on that form, that work item. Okay? Notice that it's picked out those changes. I can add more and say, let's change another field to repo steps. Don't forget this. Okay, random capitalization. That's new. I can put a comment in there if I want to. And let's name the template. So, new production bugs. Hey, caps lock, cool. Okay. Now that copy link is important for us. I'll save that. And I'm going to copy the link. Now that hyperlink that's created can now be used anywhere to go and create one of these particular templated work item types. Maybe a convenient place for that. Let's go over to maybe our dashboard. Get out of there. Don't say that. Okay, on my dashboard, let's go and edit the dashboard. I'm going to go and add, say, a markdown. That works for me. I'll go and edit the markdown and say, syntax for brackets. Syntax for a link. Imagine that, forgetting his markdown. Absolutely no idea. That's right. I'll put in its entirety the ugly URL there. What you're really seeing is a nice convenient little string that says new production bug. Okay? Imagine that. I think I've done it a million times and I've just forgotten. So we make that little subtle change there. I go ahead and click on save. It really does look ugly, doesn't it? I'll say okay. And in fact, let's even grab that. Change that. Maybe that's our single most important thing. All right, so in the world of imagination, you see up the top there, instead of the word markdown, I probably could have safely changed that to, what would I call that? I'd probably go and call that something like shortcuts. I'm not very creative on a Friday morning. And what that would say is new production bug. We could have something like new high priority feature. Just a couple of quick, easy things there so that directly from the dashboard, anyone can go in there, click the hyperlink. In fact, we should even prove that that works or disprove. Okay, so if we click on this link, okay, it goes in there, creates the work item for us. It has the defaults that I changed, so it is going to assign that by default to Shane. Don't forget this with my funny little capital R looking really ridiculous there. So that's the idea of the use of a work item template. As a hyperlink, you can access that in many, many different ways, and you don't have to put it on the dashboard. It was just an easy place to put it. Okay. I can go and manage those templates, rename them, delete them. I can make the templates a different way, but probably capturing them from an initial work item will be the most easiest for us to consider. Okay, I don't want to worry about saving that one. I can hear you disappointed. All right. The next little tip that I want to talk about is that oftentimes we get bug reports maybe that aren't bug reports. But instead, they're, that's exactly how it's supposed to work. What they really are asking for is a change in that default behavior. So they've raised a bug that isn't really a bug. They've raised a bug that should be a new user story, something that we can prioritize on our backlogs, and maybe it gets up, maybe it doesn't. Okay? Sometimes it could also be that they've raised the bug and placed it in the wrong team project. So maybe the core fault here isn't in my SimpleCalc, but it's in a framework project. It's some core functionality offered by another team project. Okay? So we've had some of this for a little while now. So what we want to be able to do is, there's a typo, sweet. I told you I was going to add some of those. What we want to do is easily change a work item from one type to a different type. It's kind of, yes. If you sort of squish it, the Y could be a T. We want to be able to move work items from one team project to another. We're getting a lot more flexibility. For anyone that's been using TFS for a good while, you'll know that it hasn't been very flexible. It hasn't been very forgiving. We've had to do a lot of it's in the wrong place, create a new one over here, copy-paste it across, close this one out. We've had to do a lot of that sort of manual workaround, which hasn't been ideal. So let's have a look at that demonstration. So if I go over and find a work item, pick a work item. Ooh, that's an interesting work item. I wonder what that is. It's a nonsense work item. Neat. Okay, so I might go into my backlog. Okay, Ben's bug is shown here as a user story. So I can go in and choose to change the type of work item. I can say, well, that's actually not a user story. I want to go ahead and change that to a bug. Now, I'll provide a reason, and that reason will exist or become part of the, you know, the history of the work item. We'll see exactly that it was created as a user story, and this person, this date and time, changed that across and made it into the bug for us. Okay, so just a nice, another little thing that's a little bit easier for us. Cancel that. I can also go in there, and we've got the ability to move this to a different team project. That's what I said when we, you know, the bug was raised against my simple calc, but it's not one of our problems, it's a framework problem, so I can move that across to a different team project. Okay? Easily move it to a different iteration, or I can drag and drop that, or I can modify the iteration field directly. So lots of ways to work with work items that are convenient for whatever you happen to be doing. Oh, hang on, there was something else there I wanted to show. There's a keyboard shortcut, and you guys might have to help me out here. It was introduced, I want to say, 2015 update 3. There was a key sequence that would show you all the keyboard shortcuts for a backlog or board. Who knows what that is? Okay, I'm going to have a guess here. Okay, what have I just pressed? Okay, hang on. Shift question mark. Yes. Okay. So when you press shift question mark, has anyone seen that guy? He just sort of snuck out in one of those updates for us. So obviously in VSTS you're seeing it right now, but TFS 2015 update 2 or 3. So try on a board or a backlog that question mark and see when that pops up for you. Okay, so if you're spending a lot of time on these things, it's nice to have keyboard shortcuts available for us. And unless someone tells you about it, you won't instinctively find that, as far as I didn't. Okay, let's get out of there. Right, so this particular problem, that's not how we want to work. Some of our team members have used other products. I do find I get this request quite often, where someone's coming from another tool that they're very, very familiar with. They're coming across to VSTS or TFS, and you know, the other tool calls them defects, not bugs, so we want to rename it. That's a terrible idea, by the way. Yeah, don't do that. Having done it once for a client, at their absolute insistence, it was an absolute disaster. It worked, but it introduced huge technical debt and made it nigh on impossible for them when they were upgrading to the next version of TFS. It's just a bad idea. Just a little aside there that I wanted to share with you. So we want to be able to go and change things. All our projects are very, very large, and we need a way of grouping epochs into bigger work item types. Who's ever done any process template customization with TFS 2015 or earlier? Okay, one hand maybe? No one else? Two, couple of hands? Okay. It's not a lot of fun. I've been working with TFS since before its first release. And, I mean, I was always used to just using XML files, so I tend to always open up the XML files and just do it by hand. When Microsoft acquired the Process Template Editor and built that into the Power Tools, okay, that gave us a GUI. And the GUI was... Yeah, anyone else? The GUI was passable sometimes. If you just wanted to go in there and add a couple of fields or change a few trivial things, it was fine. But if you wanted to go and change the workflow, change the states and that visualization, that was the least intuitive experience I think I can recall in many years. And I was a bit disappointed that after acquiring it, they really did nothing to change it or to improve it or to continue on with it. So there is a much better experience. That experience is today limited to VSTS. In TFS 2017, they have just released the Process Template Editor power tool. I think we can call it a power tool. But it's still the old school one for doing it the old school way. Okay? So VSTS has this really sweet experience. TFS, not yet. Okay? I'm not sure what their plans are there. So keep doing it the way you're doing it today on premises, but in the cloud, they make life a little easier. I should have just used that. Okay, so what's an easy way to do this? Let's go into the admin side of things. Okay. Which is the easiest way to do this? I'm going to choose one of my teams. Let's make the change for the gold team because they're troublemakers. Yeah, gold, nice. Okay, so what I want to do in here, mental block, where's my process? Okay, so right now we see stories and features. We've had that for a little while. We can go and enable epics. If you're familiar with your process template customization on premises, you'll know that you've been able to have up to 5 levels of hierarchy there through template customization for the last couple. In VSTS, we've been limited previously until just, usually it was 2. Then we introduced, Microsoft introduced epics, primarily, I believe, for support for the Scaled Agile framework. But what if we want to do something above that? Let's pick a work item. Let's go into... Why are you doing that? This one. I'll choose to come over here and say customize, and there's plenty of ways of doing it. Have a look at that screen. That's very, very, very different. You've not had a convenient built-in GUI in the past to do any form of customization. All subject to security. I will keep reminding and pointing that out, so just your average contributor can't go in there and wreak havoc. So right now what we see is I can see that I've got 3 processes, the standard 3 that are available. Up here, system processes can't be customized. I'm going to say, well, look, I want to create an inherited process. Wow, that's exciting. An inherited process. So this inheritance hierarchy between process templates. So I can say, well, look, I want to start with Agile. I want to create an inherited template with some changes. I want to apply that inherited one to this project and that project. Let's create another one, and then changes can be made flow down through them. For TFS administrators who do that customization, they may have a number of team project collections, a number of team projects, and then every time a change is made, they've got to manually go and put that change into every existing team project. That problem's getting, you know, hopefully will go away soon, but for now, this is what? VSTS only. Okay? I'm going to call this one Corporation Gold Coast. There we go. I better throw Agile in there. And the description is, hello, Gold Coast. Because you can't give them a good meaningful one. We're going to go and create that process. It's going to inherit directly down from Agile. And then it says, do you want to create a project with this inherited template? We've done nothing with it. Do you want to change team projects to use it? Wow. Okay, we haven't been able to do that on-prem at all. And then we want to customize this inherited process template. So what I'll do here is have a look. I can go to my work item types. You can see a variety of different work item types here all through the GUI. We can see the layouts, the fields that we're using. Now it's suddenly a lot easier to go in there and just add the occasional field. And I'm not against that form of customization at all. Don't get carried away. Okay, that's a cautionary tale. So it's not a case of, hey, what would you like to change? If you're the TFS administrator, that's handing people loaded guns. Never going to work out well for you. So what we'll do instead is we'll push back, we'll shake off the gold plating and try and limit our customizations to those things that are offering high value, if you can. In this particular case, there's a different work item types there. I can work with my fields. I can go to my backlog levels. And on this occasion, I want to go and add a new backlog type. I'll say create a new one, and we're going to call this one experiences. So experiences are very large pieces of work that might carry over multiple epics, multiple features. So this is a vision for the next 18 months worth of work. I am really kind of glad that out of the box they only gave us two or three by default in the Agile portfolio, because if they gave us five or six, people would try and use them unnecessarily. So in this example, and I think a good colour for experiences is pink, because I know for a fact that's not used anywhere else. Correct. I'll say save, and up the top there, you'll see my new entry in the portfolio backlogs. I probably should have specified a new work item type, so I'll pop back in there briefly. And my experiences, as a collective term, will contain these new experience work items. And that'll be the default. Doing that by hand editing XML files in the past, I mean, it wasn't difficult, but it was problematic. We had to do a lot of testing and so on. Now we've got this much, well, yeah, I'll use the word safer, easier way of doing these sorts of customizations. Okay, plenty more things there, but I won't bore you with that. But there can be a lot of value, particularly integration fields, if we want to link this back to another tool we're using in the company. And that creates a job ID, and I want to record the job ID somewhere in TFS as a work in the work item itself. Just going and adding that field in is a very easy thing for us to do. Okay, well, more easy with VSTS and this capability. Okay, let's get out of there. Oh, I jumped ahead. So that's next generation process template editing. I'm moving past it. The next problem that I want to share with you or talk about is difficulties getting an overview of our work. Okay, to get an overview of our work, especially when we work across multiple teams and team projects, sometimes that's involved us going in and opening each of these things. Just out of curiosity, how many of you do work across different teams and team projects? I'd say roughly a quarter, maybe a little bit more than that. So it is common enough. Life is easier, certainly from the tooling perspective, if you are just working in one team, I've got to say. But jumping across between them isn't ideal. So how can I get a view of my work items, things assigned to me, regardless of the project or the team? And for this one, we're just going to review. That's a problem, and I'm not going to give you a solution. That's a copy-paste error. Okay, so the solution to that problem, I've taken it to a new level. It's not just typos anymore. Actually, maybe it was a copy-paste typo. Maybe it still was. So let's just jump back over here. So what we want to do there is revisit the account landing page. So what I'll do here is just get rid of most of that URL. Now, remember this screen that I showed at the start of the presentation? I sort of skimmed over work items and said we'd come back and revisit it. So by simply landing on my account landing page and choosing work items, what we'll see here is, by default, work items assigned to me. Okay, that's very descriptive. As the name suggests, that is work items assigned to me. And you'll see in the second last column there, we've got my simple calc, and then we continue down into my sample data. So it's all of my work items assigned to me, regardless of what team project they're in. So I can easily see those in a very simple place. Across the top there, you also see following. And while I've got a slide for that one, I'm a little cognizant of the time. So what's following all about? So another challenge that we have is there's often work items that we have a very special interest in, and sometimes it's just an interest for a couple of days. So you could be responsible as a product owner for a particular, a nasty bug. It's an urgent production fix we've got to get. So for the next day or two, if anything changes about that work item, send me an email, let me know. It could be that we've got a particular interest, we're fulfilling the role of maybe a BA, and we're shepherding through this feature to the application. So anything that changes about that, let me know. Have you done that in the past? That's not new. We've been able to get those email notifications since maybe as far back as 2005. Yeah, that's a bit ambitious. Maybe it wasn't that far back. But what we're talking about is work item alerts. So your work item alerts haven't always been particularly easy to use. They're not hard, but they're not intuitive either. And if I just want to get a notification of any changes to this work item for the next day or two, it's a drag to have to jump across to alerts, set up alerts, remember the work item ID and so on. It should not be that hard. So if I was to choose to pop into back to projects, back into my Simple Calc, I'll pick a work item, any work item. Okay, simple addition functionality there. So on the Kanban board, while we're looking at it, you'll also see that 6 out of those 11 tasks have been completed. I also get a glance here to say that there are 4 tests testing this requirement, and the little symbol there tells me at least one of them is failing, and I can easily go in there and see that that's a lovely test name that's currently in a failing status. Okay, so the boards are getting more and more useful for us. Okay, we added syntax highlighting a little while ago, editing a little while ago. What am I thinking of? Styling. So what I want to do is open up that work item. I got distracted there. And the thing I really want you to see is just that little following option up the top there. I can click following. I already was. I'll click it again. I'm now following that particular work item. That sets up the work item alert for me with just a simple click. So if anything changes on that work item now, I'm going to be notified via email to say, hey, something's changed. When I'm no longer interested, it's a simple toggle for me. So I can say, well, actually, I don't care anymore. That's exactly how it should be. It makes more sense, I guess, for those short-lived things. Things where, we want to keep an eye on that bug. It's expected to be fixed by tomorrow. But in the meantime, I want a proactive notification if anything changes about it. So for those things that we are following, back to that account homepage. If I go back, quickly just strip that off. Go back to work items, you'll see following. And from that simple location there, I can easily get a list of all the things that I'm particularly interested in right now, regardless of the work item type that it is. And I look at it and go, okay, yeah, no, that one's okay, I've handed that one off, or it's now closed. I can also unfollow from here quickly and easily. And then what have I been doing? All sorts of things. Okay. How am I going for time? Not well, 7 minutes. In terms of the slides that are left, I think one of the other problems that I wanted to talk about was the idea that, who's ever heard of a concept, I suppose I'll call it, one team project to rule them all? It was a blog post that Martin Hinserwood out of Glasgow wrote. And as an idea, what it's about is a workaround to a limitation of the product. So if we go and create collection, 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 team project, team project, team project, we're in a big organisation, lots of teams working. Invariably, someone, the project management office, someone's going to want to look at reporting across the top. And what's the bad news for them? None. Okay? You've got to roll your own. With a reporting perspective, there's plenty of things available to us. Particularly on-prem, when we can get into the data warehouse, get into the analysis services cube, we can go and roll our own, but it very much is a roll-your-own story. So, in terms of, what do they call this? I think in the product team, this is referred to as the scaled agile work they're doing, not to be confused with scaled agile framework, which is also supported within the product. So scaled agile, they're introducing the ideas of being able to look across the top, which is something we've wanted for a long time. Okay. So the first thing they're delivering there is this idea of a delivery plan. Okay. So let's have a look at what delivery plans are all about. I'm going to switch back into my Simple Calc. Okay. I'm going to go back up to work. I'm going to click on plans. So plans are currently in preview. And we've only got just one initial one there to start. I'm going to say that I want to create a new delivery plan. And this is all about, in this example, I want to look across my different teams. I want to see what they're working on, and I want to see it in a broad calendar view so that I know exactly how we're tracking. I can talk to them and say, hey, is that going to come out here? I can even, it's fully interactive. I can say, I'm taking that work off you. I'm going to put it over here. So let's go ahead and call this one, are we going to make it? And I'll say for that project, I want the blue team, and I want to see it at the user stories level. I want to go and add the gold team at the stories level. And I've deliberately gone in and made it so that they're not all sharing the exact same iterations. So when I click on create here, I'm going to squash that down so we can get a more holistic view. I'll change the scaling. I'll zoom back in so you can see it. But straight away, this delivery plan is showing me the blue team with iterations 1, 2, and 3. They look like probably two-week sprints. The gold team, just for a bit of variation there, they're working on three-week sprints. And the red team down the bottom are also going with the standard iterations 1, 2, 3. And what I can see there is what they're working on. I'll have a look in iteration one. So here's today. And I can skim down and look at what each of the teams are working on. I can say, okay, guys, in iteration two, you're going to focus on this particular user story and fix that bug. You know, is that going to work out okay? I do have one little issue with this, perhaps. It allows us to see what they expect to work on in future sprints. And I don't know by the book if that's a good practice for Scrum. We shouldn't really be choosing too early which items we're going to be working on in future sprints. Okay? Certainly not at a user story level. Maybe at a higher level in the portfolio backlog, perhaps. So this is the very first in the area of delivery plans. There's a few others in the pipeline that we'll expect to see. They are interactive. They'll say, look, we're not going to make that for iteration two, so a simple drag and drop will reassign that to iteration three. That just changes a single field on a work item type for us. Okay. And we can zoom in and zoom out there. And if you are working on a lot of teams, getting a good monitor there, being able to get that, you know, over-the-top view. Heck, we've wanted that for a while. Who thinks that's a great idea? A great start. Yeah? Yeah, I do too. It's in the field helping customers adopt this. Yeah, they've sort of been asking for this kind of thing for a long time. All right, well, I've got 2 minutes. Okay, I'm not going to get through too many slides there, so let's get you guys ready for your next session. So switch back over here. Ooh, black. Black can't be good. Fortunately, I had talked about a lot of those things. You just saw me skim over there. See, follow work items and so on. Pop this up. Well, thank you very much for coming along this morning and making the effort to get up bright and early on a Friday. Hopefully you've been having a wonderful Ignite conference so far, and I don't think I called it TechEd once. Did I? I made it all the way through. This is awesome. Continue your learning path there. I'm happy to chat about any of these sorts of things, so I'll head down to the Expo Hall and happy to take any questions. Please fill in your evals. If you've done a good job, it's nice to hear that. If I've done a lousy job, I guess I need to hear that as well, so that I can get better and improve there. And there's usually some wonderful little incentives for those of you providing that feedback. So thanks again, and enjoy the last day of the conference. Take care.